You are tuned to KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna, and it is time once again for the Kenai Conversation. And this week we are happy to have with us in the studio a couple of members of the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly, Hal Smalley and Dale Bagley, with us this morning. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in. Good to see you both in the studio again.
Thank you, Shaylin. Glad to be here.
Yeah, good morning.
Going to pull your microphone up there a little bit, Hal, and...
How's that?
That's better? Just fine. Yep, closer the better. And of course, this morning, there are tons to talk about. We've had probably you've noticed a lot of stories about the borough budget over the past several months, and lots going on at the borough. We're going to hit on some of those topics this morning. And of course, if you would like to get in on the conversation, we would love to hear from you as well. 283-8414 is the number. If you'd like to ask a question of Borough Assembly members Hal Smalley or Dale Bagley, questions about what's going on at the Kenai Peninsula Borough, 283-8414. And just to kind of get it started off, I mean, the big sort of development here recently is that after many, many months of discussions and hard work and crunching numbers, the borough does have a budget. It's not precisely probably what everyone expected it would be or hoped it might be when we started the process at the beginning of the year, but we do have a budget. And I guess just to begin, I'd like to open it up and ask for your opinions and perspectives on how this all went and how this process played out this year. And Dale, we'll start with you. Thanks for being here.
Yeah. So I think the most important thing you do as an assembly member is the budget. And it isn't, you know, I've seen years where nobody shows up to testify and does anything, and I am glad that we had a lot of involvement this time as we worked through these issues. I think anytime you're talking about raising taxes, revenues, there does tend to be a little bit more communication and you hear from the public. But we've had some challenges. I think last year we had a deficit of about $4 million. This year it was about $3 million. We ended up... giving thanks to the legislature putting in some more money for schools, we were able to give them $600,000, and they pretty much got, you know, what they were looking for. That brought our deficit up to $3.6 million, and then we did end up doing a small mill rate increase of 0.2, which, if my math's right, our deficit should be about $1.8 million. I haven't seen the final numbers from finance, but I think it's somewhere right in that neighborhood, which isn't too bad. You have revenues that usually come in higher than projected, and expenses that you know, don't get spent for whatever reason. And while that's not ideal, I'd like to see that gap get a little closer. I think it'll do for this year. And if the bed tax does get on the ballot and pass the voters, that's something that can, you know, in fact, if that actually happens, we might be able to reduce the mill rate next year.
And bed tax is something that we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about a little bit later this hour. But Hal, the same question to you. What were your thoughts on going through this budget process? And especially with a new administration in, and that is something else that is kind of a variable, a new administration, first time through a budget process, that sort of thing. What were your thoughts? How'd you think things turned out?
Well, I think by and large, we made some compromises on some of the decisions we made. And as you indicated, we didn't get everything each of us wanted, but by and large, we did get a budget, and it's close. I agree with Dale. The difference is going to be around 1.8, somewhere in there. And we do have other revenue measures that we're looking at in upcoming meetings. So I think we're going to be fine. And if we are and we end up fine, then the assembly next year, which every year an assembly looks at the mill rate, and they can move that upwards or downwards.
And there was, as debates about this were going on, there had been a proposal out there, and I want to make sure I have this right. There had been a proposal that was going to tie a mill rate increase to a sales tax increase, but that's sort of dead and buried, and the mill rate increase has been adopted, and that is what it is. But the sales tax question has yet to be left for another day, right?
As far as from the assembly, I think the assembly dealt with it, but I believe that there's a signature drive going out there that will look to try to put that half-cent sales tax on the ballot. The reason why I think the two were tied together, because they would raise about the same amount of money. A sales tax increase is required to go to the voters. A mill rate increase is not. So not knowing what's going to happen in October, we saw a potential mill rate increase, which would raise about the same amount of revenue. So.
Mm-hmm.
As it turned out, it was amended down. And it's about 1.7, 1.65 million that it'll generate.
Yeah. And that's something that's interesting, too. And we hear this talked about every budget cycle. And I think it's worth mentioning here is this idea that we have potential votes on the ballot in the fall that could affect revenues greatly, either by leaving them where they are or by increasing them significantly through some sort of a tax measure. But we do the budget, you know, 5 months prior to that, 4 months prior to that, and that can kind of complicate things. And that's, I just think that that's worth mentioning, that that's kind of a variable too, is that you're building a budget when you're not 100% sure how deep that well might be. You know there's a well, you know what how tall the water is, but you don't know how deep that water might go. Yeah, and so sales taxes is one of those things. And I guess, what do you see as pros and cons to this? Because there are pros and cons to everything. So, I mean, the big con, at least as I understand it and as I talk to people, is at its core, sales tax is kind of a regressive tax. And so that's kind of a con against it. But at the same time, what makes it regressive is that it's very broadly applied. And especially here on the peninsula, we're interested in applying it to folks who are just visiting for a short time and are trying to spend some money here. So maybe from both of you, what are your thoughts on sort of the pros and cons of a sales tax increase? Dale?
Yeah, so, you know, my problem is I don't want to see a big tax on the property owners. And I think your tax base should be diversified. And I think we do have that. I know my concern with the sales tax, the cities, we heard from the cities, and they had some concerns about sales tax going up too much, because then it would limit their hands to raise sales tax in the future, which is, you know, one of the main taxes that the cities actually have in the area. I still just can't. We had a teacher testify that he had brought this problem to the kids in his class, and one of the kids spoke up and said, well, everywhere that does tourism has a bed tax and we don't have a bed tax, then are we, you know, leaving money on the table? And I just can't really get that out of my head. And I think this is I think we should have a bed tax. And I guess that's my solution to the problem. And I would rather save talking about a sales tax for some other time. But a bed tax is really what I am after.
And that's interesting, because the bed tax has been, it's been brought forward a number of times, and you've been a proponent of it, Dale, for some time. And it's never gotten any traction. It's never had a lot of support. But that debate I noticed, and maybe this is just my perception, but I'd be curious what you gentlemen think. My perception is that in this debate in particular, as a lot more taxing options and mill rate increases, property tax increases have been on the table throughout this debate, that notion of a bed tax being not so good simply because it is a tax, that doesn't seem to be quite as strong an argument. And I feel like that maybe it's turned a little bit of a corner when you're talking about, well, if we're not going to charge visitors, we're going to have to start charging ourselves for this stuff. Maybe that's, that argument is starting to gain a little traction. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
So
yeah, Dale.
Yeah. So the few things on that. The last time the voters voted on a sales tax was in 2005, and it did fail by 9%, which I think is certainly closer than some of the other ballot questions that have been on the ballot the last 3 years. So I think that part's good. As far as at the assembly level, we did pass it one time and the mayor vetoed it. And then it didn't pass earlier in the year. And I'm hoping that, you know, this time it will actually pass. And it seems like we've always had conflicting tax increases on the table that's always caused a problem with getting it passed. But anyway, that's just the way it is.
Right. Well, and that's something else that we talk about, is this idea of, you know, where do funds come from to pay for these things? And it can be a hard sell, especially in certain pockets of the peninsula. It just is the way it is.
Government and services require revenue. And when you make one cut, it has a constituency attached to it. And those folks that realize that cut, they're the ones that get concerned about it. If you don't realize it, you've lost nothing, then you want those cuts made. And there have been some cuts made over the years. I would say they're significant. We've seen decline in some of the services that are available to our residents. Getting back to the sales tax, bed tax issue, you know, we heard from the cities. sales tax is something that they utilize as a part of their, a big, a significant part of their budget. Well, you know, 65% of the borough budget is school funding. It's pretty significant, and I think a small increase that we were looking at would be appropriate. It's spread across the borough. Tourists are going to be paying that for approximately 4.5 to 5 months that they're visiting the peninsula. I'd like to see it go to the voters. Mm-hmm. I hope the signatures are collected to do that. A bed tax, just about everywhere you go, you're paying a bed tax. And it's passed through to the tourists. And when I travel to Homer, when I travel to Seward or anywhere else in the state, I'm a tourist. And I utilize services that are available, and I should pay make a payment on that. And that's what a bed tax helps do. That's what sales taxes help do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and Hal Smalley and Dale Bagley with us this morning on the Kenai Conversation. If you'd like to jump in, have some thoughts, questions, concerns about what's doing at the borough level, give us a call. 283-8414 is the number. Again, 283-8414. And Hal, you mentioned education funding, and I know that you've been kind of out in front of this throughout this budget cycle and for your career, really. But I'd be curious to know a little bit about what those discussions were like. I know you visited with our delegation in Juneau about funding issues, and I'd just be curious to know what some of those conversations were like, and you know, what that mood was in Juneau and how it was to deal with that those questions when we're having our own budget struggles here and the state's having its own budget struggles. And
well, early in the session, when Juneau was working through measures, looking at budgets and so on, there was, you know, chit-chat about what could be done to raise revenues. And what finally came out in my conversations with part of our delegation was that they were working on something. It's going to be some time before, and that means it's at the end of the session when deals are made, and we got some partial temporary funding that came through. 2 years of, they call, you know, it's been referred to as forward funding, but yes and no. I mean, there was an additional $20 million that was granted to education funding this year, and another $30 million next year that gets attached to the student allocated funds. But it doesn't affect them, it goes away. So it's not really forward funding it, but it's just additional amount of money. And when I talked to them at the end of the session, the conversation was, you know, we came as far as we could down in Juneau. We got as much as we could. We're now relying on local governments to do their share. And so that's what prompted me to bring my numbers forward, which basically brought the funding up to what was the old original cap that we dealt with.
Yeah, and that's been a theme the last several years is as state revenues have declined and there's been a lot of budget cuts at that level, more and more responsibility and more of the onus has been put on local governments to provide services, and some of those grants have gone away, some of those bigger projects have been, you know, pushed to the back burner. And Dale, I would be curious, you know, from your perspective, having been borough mayor now 15 or so years ago, that's enough time has passed to have seen what I would imagine has been a pretty significant change in how the borough government interacts sort of financially with state government. And it hasn't necessarily maybe always been for the best. I don't know.
Well, we had the same problem actually when I was mayor. They were having problems with price oil back then also, and they had cut revenue sharing for a while, and then it got reinstated as the price of oil went back up. You know, I think I would just add a little bit on to what Hal was talking about, that you know, probably one of the difference between us and the state is the state's funding problem was definitely tied to the price of oil. Our funding problem was tied more toward, well, losing the state revenue sharing obviously was one of it, but then there was an initiative to get rid of the tax on groceries 9 months of the year, and that had a huge financial impact to the borough. And then also there was the $20,000 to $50,000, which I think should happen, but it had a financial impact to the borough. And those are things that you know, we've had to deal with, and I think if that hadn't been there, we wouldn't have been having any sort of a problem at all, even with the $2 million cut from the state, we would have still been fine. So if the grocery tax had stayed where it is. And by the way, I might just segue into that. I do have an amendment to put that on the ballot for a vote and changing it from taxing 9 months of the year and or not not taxing 9 months of the year, taxing 3 months of the year, to change that to taxing groceries 6 months of the year and not taxing 6 months of the year, and it'd be tied into the quarters. So that's something that will possibly be on the ballot this fall also, if the assembly supports putting it on there.
And that's something else. You mentioned the grocery tax and property tax exemptions going from that exemption expanding here some years ago. And that's something, again, throughout this particular budget cycle that I've noticed be mentioned more, is that some of the exemptions that were put in place when, you know, kind of times were good, that those are things that it's time to revisit again and see if it's worth going back to revenues that used to be on the table. It wouldn't be as if some of these things are new ideas. It's stuff that existed in one form or another before. Just we didn't need it then, but maybe now we do need it. And so I guess this is that time to revisit some of those things, you would think, yeah?
I think we're going to see coming a discussion about property tax exemptions. I think, Dale, you'll have to chime in on this. I think it's around $9 million in revenues that is not coming in. In some areas, it's community-wide, pretty much senior population.
Right.
And that has an impact on that community. So.
Yeah, it becomes a very difficult discussion. I mean, it's when you've lowered someone's tax bill, and then you go back some years later and say, well, that was nice while it lasted, but it's just a really tough sell. And so I guess with the property tax exemption, that's not anything that has to go to the voters. That's an assembly question, right?
I believe that's correct.
Yeah. And so how do you see that debate? I mean, I can kind of play chess in my head and see how that debate plays out and keep score for myself. But what do you think that discussion would be like?
Well, one of the things that I guess I would just add on the, for instance, let's take the senior exemption. The state says that we'll do $150,000. The Kenai Peninsula Borough does $300,000. And then because of the initiative that took the personal exemption from $20,000 to $50,000, even though the assembly back at the time did not want the $50,000 on top of the $300,000, the exemption or the initiative actually said that it would be on top of. So that's how we got to $350,000 that most seniors get as a exemption on their house. And I think the takeaway on that particular issue is the Kenai Peninsula Borough is very, very generous. And I know that it's going to be tough to ever do anything about that. And I think probably if I had to guess, I hear what Hal's saying, and we can look at this and whatnot, but, you know, when my mother-in-law calls me up yelling at me, I'm you know, not going to be too happy about it. And I think that you know, we're going to have to look at that. But I think what will probably end up playing out is at some point, I would think, and this may be many years in the future, the state will raise the mandatory amount. And eventually the state raising the mandatory amount will catch up to where we are and, you know, and we'll finally be there, probably.
Find some equilibrium there at that point. So this is an interesting discussion to the senior tax exemption, because you can't really have that discussion without tying it all into sort of the broader demographic trends on the peninsula and essentially trying to find that balance of how do you make this a great place for seniors to come and live and volunteer and retire, because we do have so many wonderful volunteers and folks who are seniors who are so active in the community. And there's a lot of good benefits, and this is a great place for them to be here. But then also finding that balance so that the burden of providing services in a great place isn't all just on working young people. And I've heard that as part of this sort of overall debate, too, and striking that balance. And how do you frame that up in your mind, Hal, as you're thinking about these issues and different age groups and who contributes what? And it seems like a lot.
I guess the simple answer to all that is yes. and that I think that will be a part of the discussion, but I agree with what Dale is saying, is that when it comes time to make a decision as to what's going to go away, it's going to be tough. It's going to be really tough. I won't even predict about what will go away. I do know that we are losing some revenue there, and I know the seniors have made a significant contribution, mostly to the peninsula. But the fairness of having the younger folks pay that difference in tax, that pay that burden, it's not fair. It's not right.
And Dale, you used a term a little bit earlier, getting back to this bed tax idea of sort of leaving money on the table, and that's how I've often characterized it too, because I think that it's interesting to me to look around to different parts of the state. The Mat-Su Borough, in particular, not exactly known for its progressive fiscal policies, I don't think would be any way to characterize that. But when a place like that is able to gather the support to find revenues from that spot, you would think that would bolster the case here. But I don't know I'm trying to understand why that doesn't translate, because we're not that far away from the Mat-Su.
Well, I think you have to go back to, we've only asked the voters this back in 2005, and mm-hmm. we were in a different fiscal climate at the time. Actually, through most of the time I was mayor, we actually had too much money, and we were trying to reduce the mill rate down enough to lose money, I guess, essentially, on our budget, so that we could get the fund balance down into the range that it needed to be. So we were in a little different climate in that time. And toward the end of my 6 years, things were getting tight, and we needed to do something because we couldn't keep losing the money every year because we'd got it into the range that we needed to get it in. And that was one of the things that we had proposed. And it failed at the voters by not only 9%. And I do think attitudes and feelings about that have changed. And I really would like to ask the voters the question again and see what they say.
So. How do you avoid, and maybe it's not even possible to avoid, given sort of the up and down nature of some of the mainstays of our economy here locally, but how do you avoid those sorts of ups and downs where for a couple of years as a borough, you're dealing with a surplus, and that's, as you mentioned, as it deals with the fund balance and healthy numbers for that, and then you adjust that, and now a couple of years later, other things have come along and affected the economy, and now you're dealing with a deficit. And how do you stabilize that, or can you stabilize that? What's the magic bullet? Who's got it?
I don't know that there is any magic bullet, but I will say this. This is kind of a pet peeve of mine, and it's at the administration level of both the borough and the cities, and it has to do with how you do a budget. And I think that a budget should be your best guess of what's going to happen. And I don't think most of the time it is. A budget tends to be a very conservative guess on the revenues that are going to come in, and a very conservative estimate on the revenues that you're going to spend, or the expenditures that you're going to spend on things. And because of that, there tends to be this huge difference between what your budget actually says and what actually it is when the CAFR comes out, a year and 4 months later. And I think that's one of the reasons why we got to having too much money to begin with, is we would dutifully do a balanced budget, and we would stick $2 to $4 million into our fund balance every year. And because we weren't actually doing realistic projections on this thing. And no finance director ever, they get worried about guessing revenues. And this problem isn't just at the borough level. I'll say this problem is at the city level too. And if you do a balanced budget, most of the time you're sticking money into your general fund. And I think that you need to take a look at that and ways to try to adjust that. And that would help you with a more honest prediction of what's happening. Otherwise, some of the things you're just not going to have any say in. You just have to roll with it and deal with it as the time comes up, depending upon what's going on. With a number of factors.
I'm a baseball fan, and I think all the time of how big data, powerfully large amounts of data, have contributed to changing baseball and your ability to foresee the future and predict things much more accurately than you were before. I guess I understand the concept of wanting to sort of draft a budget in a conservative manner, but my thought would be that there is enough analytical power out there, especially, you know, in the year 2018, to make really very targeted projections of what is and what's not going to be. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to blame finance directors for not being whiz kids at developing algorithms and that sort of thing. But at the same time, are there tools that aren't being used in government to make these things work a little bit better?
I think there's tools. I just think that finance people, a lot of time, I'll be blunt about this, don't really want the legislative body to know how much money there is sometimes. And I think that's why they take that conservative approach to the way they do things. But I've been very frustrated about this for many years, and I've been in local government since 94, and I've seen this happen quite a bit.
Is that, Hal, is that something that you share, that that frustration with that gap that might be able to be tightened up a little bit and make decisions a little bit easier to make?
You know, I agree mostly, I think, with what Dale was saying. I've worked with a number of finance directors at both the city, state, and the borough levels. Finance officers like to protect budgets, mm-hmm. and they feel very uncomfortable giving a guesstimate. But when pushed, we've always gotten them. We've received them reluctantly, but you know, there's no magic bullet out there that or magic way of getting it accomplished. You just wait and see at the very end. Although there are some, having the discussions is what's important. And I know at the borough level, this is my seventh year serving, we've always had the finance director there during the budget discussions to provide background information and so on. So that's been good.
And I would point out, just so, kind of behind the curtain, as the borough assembly debated the budget this last go around and put the vote together, that was a very long meeting. That was a long couple of meetings. The borough's finance director, Brandy Harbaugh, had a full desk set up and a computer and paperwork stacked way up, and she was ready to go. She had numbers ready to go that entire time. That was actually quite impressive.
Yeah, our borough has had outstanding finance directors, and Brandy came up through the time in those positions and does an excellent job.
Well, as we get to the bottom of the hour here, I forgot to bring in a cup of coffee this morning. I don't know that we need it. We've had a lively discussion so far, and much more to come on the second half of the Kenai Conversation coming up this morning. If you have some questions, concerns, ideas, thoughts, notions about what's doing at the Kenai Peninsula Borough, give us a call. 283-8414 is the number. We're going to take just a quick little break here at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back. Stay with us. And welcome back. Thanks for sticking with us. So you're on the Kenai Conversation this morning on KDLL 91.9 FM. Kenai Soldotna joined this morning with Hal Smalley and Dale Bagley from the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly. We've spent a good portion of the first half of the program this morning talking about the recent budget decisions at the borough level, getting that settled or sort of settled, and then, of course, some of the revenue options that have been talked about this year and some of those questions and decisions that will be coming up in the coming weeks and then potentially later this fall with some measures perhaps showing up on the ballot or certainly showing up on the ballot, and we'll see what voters think about those. But I wanted to move into a few other things and kind of think about, maybe now that we're through the budget, which of course is the big goal and the big sort of responsibility for the assembly each year, now that we're through that process, sort of what might be coming down the pike. And I know that sort of on the planning side of things at the borough, there's been a lot of work done with a material site working group. We've done a bit of reporting on it here at KDLL, talking largely about gravel pits and material extraction, that sort of thing. And I guess just sort of broadly to open it up to you, gentlemen, what are your thoughts, or do you have any expectations of what you might see out of this group, or do you have any notions of what sort of maybe at least what sort of direction this work might go? Anything like that, Dale?
Well, right now they're postponed their meetings until the fall. I think they're going to start back up then. And,
right.
And you know, I guess I have some ideas of where they're going to go with things, but I don't feel like I should get ahead of them and discuss what those are. But, you know, I think the takeaway from all this is bottom line is we need gravel in this area. We need gravel for houses. We need gravel for roads. We need gravel for driveways. We need gravel for businesses. You know, we have to have gravel. And the problem is people don't want gravel pits next door. And I think, you know, probably you hear about rock crushers and whatnot, but I think probably the most annoying thing has to be the equipment backing up and that beep, beep, beep.
Yeah.
And so I know it's a concern, and I know there's going to be some wrestling with this issue because we do need gravel. It just, you know, we probably need to look at doing it in a way that is friendlier to subdivisions in this area. And I think that's what the working group will work on, and we'll see what they come forward with and what they recommend to the assembly.
Yeah, and it's one of those issues. I mean, it's sort of right there in the title. We're planning things here, and we're getting, as you mentioned during the break, Hal, sort of dangerously close to that that four-letter word zoning. And I have a hard time ever turning down an opportunity to talk about this subject a little bit because, for me, as kind of an outsider and still relatively new to Alaska, one of the great things, and Dale, you mentioned it, is that folks live where they live because they want to live there to do what they want to do. And it's one of those issues that I find fascinating because that's all great sort of in principle until your neighbor feels the same way, but not exactly the same way you feel. And so these are really difficult discussions to have in a place that's growing up. For sort of lack of a better term, I consider it to be that way. The peninsula is sort of growing up and having to deal with these issues. And Hal, in your time here, have you seen any sort of significant shift in the way folks think about these issues, or do you see these conversations as being just as difficult to have now as they were, you know, 30 years ago?
Well, I think they're still just as difficult, depending upon where the area you're talking about is, how close it is next door to you. I think it's still a discussion. I mean, zoning is not something that is popular with a lot of folks. We do have planning. And I suppose you could look at some of the adjustments that we may see down the way that we do put in place when there's a permit that comes in for a gravel pit. Hours of operation, sound barriers, site barriers, those kinds of things. They come under planning, but to a degree that is a form of zoning that's been put in place for protections for both the operators as well as your residents. And I think whenever there's a gravel pit or any removal of natural resources, you're going to see people come out of the woodwork and ask questions, be concerned, and worry about what's going to happen to their property and their property values.
Are there? Can you think back, and maybe just on a personal note, or a member of the public, a constituent, to a planning decision, or not a zoning decision because we don't do that, but what would amount to a zoning decision, either for yourself or for someone you know that you've heard about, that really was not a good deal, and because those zoning protections weren't in place, you're sort of left with no recourse as that person. I don't know if those cases exist.
They probably exist more within the cities than they do in the borough, because the cities do have planning and zoning both. But they do come before the assembly as questions, sometimes emails, phone calls to us about what's happening, what's going on next door, or why is this happening in this location, what's the need. But as Dale also indicated, we do need a lot of gravel.
Yeah, go ahead, Dale.
Yeah, I just want to talk about the zoning issue a little bit. You know, one of the things, I guess, wearing my real estate hat, I do hear probably about half the time when people come in to buy property, and all I do is sell land, and about half the time they do say, I don't want covenants, I don't want zoning. And, excuse me, I think it's important that the Kenai Peninsula Borough does provide a place for everybody and their views, and I think that, I guess one of the things I've heard assembly members in the past talk about borough-wide zoning, and I don't think I'm very supportive of that. In fact, I know I'm not supportive of that. I think there are probably some areas in this borough that are maybe ready for some zoning and outside the cities, there's some sort of limited zoning. But, you know, I think that's for those areas to figure out if they want to do and go down that route if they want to. But I definitely don't think that a borough-wide zone is going to be happening anytime soon.
Wearing that real estate hat, I'm glad you brought it up in that context. I'm curious, you know, when you are dealing with folks who are looking to buy land and do what folks come here to do, you know, whether it's open a business, start their own version of a homestead, whatever it might be, do they ask you sort of, you know, what's the reasonable expectation of what this place might be like 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road? Do you have any sort of answers for that?
That usually isn't discussed. But I mean, you know, I think it's a correct statement that people want to be able to do what they want to do, but they don't want their neighbor to be able to do what they want to do. And you certainly see that. But for the most part, I think it's a live and let live attitude that people have. And I think one of the things that helps in the borough is, you know, cities, you're on quarter acre lots. And out in the borough, they're, you know, if it's 1 acre, that's kind of a small property a lot
right.
of times. And
yeah.
So you do have a little more space in the borough than you do in the cities. And I think that may be one of the reasons why cities will, you know, do have zoning and do have very restrictive zoning and probably more restrictive zoning than what the borough might ever have someday. So anyway, that's my thoughts on that.
I wanted to stick, this is kind of specific to your bailiwick, Dale, in Soldotna. And I just wanted to touch on it because it's something that we hear a lot. And it's the annexation question and folks who live in the borough who definitely don't want to be in the city and would like to have the ability to vote on that and would like for someone on the assembly to speak on their behalf about not wanting to be on the assembly. And do you hear these things? And what is that? There doesn't really need to be necessarily any discussion between the city and the borough about that, but I'm sure there is on some level.
Well, the borough does have to do a report on what the impacts are going to be of the annexation when the city actually gets it narrowed down to what they want to do. And probably roads would be the main thing that they would need to address. In other words, the borough maintains these roads. If you annex this area, then the city will need to take over the maintenance of those roads. And that's something that they do have to prepare. But, you know, I think that it really is an issue for the city. And I think one of the things that the Boundary Commission, at the Boundary Commission level that regulates this, there has never been an annexation that's happened when it's gone to the vote of the people. So I guess if you're going to do that, then you might as well not even go down that route.
Right.
And I know that I think one of the frustrating things for me through this is there's been a lot of misinformation given out. And bottom line, most people, my commercial building is in one of the proposed areas. It's outside the city. It's on K Beach. You know, I would save $900 a year if the city was to annex that area in my taxes. That's how much of a savings I have. Most of the time, you think that the city is annexing property to make money, and that's not the case here. I think they're looking to do it to protect the sales tax revenue that they currently have, not to get money from property values in those areas. And actually, the city of Soldotna residents pay less in a mill rate than people that live in the borough. And I certainly don't think that's been talked about much and explored, and I wish there was a little bit better debate than what there has been on this issue.
Well, and I don't want to spend a ton of time on this one, but I feel like that debate will have an opportunity to be refined a bit more when after the council meets this week and they are likely to make some amendments to those proposed study areas and see just exactly what areas everybody can agree on to study. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And as we're sitting here talking about this, I'm thinking Dale from Soldotna, Hal from Kenai, and it's so interesting that Soldotna is such a small footprint and struggling with that, and here we are in Kenai with a land surplus and wondering kind of almost what to do with it all sometimes. It's
well, and
an interesting thing.
The city of Kenai's mass is larger than that of Paris, France, and that has to do with tax purposes as far as property values and revenues to the city. But yeah, it has a lot of property, and it's working on making it available, leasing it. There's been some sales, lease options with sales. And that's been a long time discussion of council for many, many years.
Sticking with sort of this interplay between the borough and cities, a few weeks back, well, it's a little bit more than that, probably a month or so ago now, a huge portion of city leaders, council members, city managers, planners, all this sort of thing, got together with the borough administration, members of the assembly, and I tuned into a portion of that meeting, and I thought it was very interesting to hear some of those conversations. I guess for the two of you who I know have both been very involved in city government over the years and borough government over the years, was there anything that came out of that sort of meeting of the minds, getting everybody together in one room, that you learned or were interested to hear about in terms of those city-borough relationships? I mean, beyond just the property tax debate, that was sort of my thought was what spurred it all, was to see how that particular tax proposal would work out in the cities. But I felt like that discussion was sort of a platform for a lot of other interesting things to be brought up.
Well, part of that discussion centered around the concept of the sales tax and the amount of sales tax. There was information out there anywhere from a half a cent up to 2 and 3 cents from the mayor in future years. Sales tax revenue is, having Dale and I both having served on city councils before, you know, that's a significant part of the revenue that is part of your general fund budget in the cities. And it was good to hear their concern about the higher sales tax amounts and how that might adversely impact what they plan to do. That was good. But just having a discussion about what's going on within those communities, how they're getting there. There was good support talk of the cities in support of what the borough is attempting to do. And I think it's good having those conversations.
Yeah. There were two takeaways, also additional takeaways that I had. One was that there was a fair amount of talk about the exemptions that the borough does and should we be doing them. And forgot the other one. It escaped me.
Well,
but
you know, I'm curious. Again, both of you having served on the assembly level and at the city council level, when you're on the assembly, are those sort of more those local municipal city issues, are those sort of playing in the back of your mind as you're dealing with borough wide stuff that does have an impact in the city, and how much does that affect your decision?
Well, I think, you know, both of us do attend our city councils. I don't go every meeting, but I'm there a lot, and I do give a report when I'm there. And so, you know, I do participate and have always been very involved with the city and what they're doing, and I know Hal is also. So, you know, you keep that in mind. I actually don't know Hal's boundary. My boundary is all of the city of Soldotna, but it also about one-third of my precinct is the Mackey Lake area, a Ridgeway mm-hmm. area outside yeah. of Soldotna. So I do have to keep that in mind. But yes, I'm primarily, well, city of Soldotna and one third outside the city limits.
Yeah. So what's right there was you're thinking about stuff that goes on and yeah.
And this Hal, in the city of Kenai, basically everything from Beaver Creek to the inlet. If you draw a straight line across the city limit boundary lines, I have everything from Beaver Creek to the west.
Yeah. I wanted to again, we were spending a little bit of time looking forward. We mentioned some work that we expect or looking forward to later this fall out of the material site working group. Here's one that I've heard some whispers on, and tell me if I'm completely wrong or if the rumor mill is just spinning way out of control here. I've heard that there's a potential for the anadromous stream ordinance that's on the borough's books, that might be coming up for debate in some form. I don't know whether that would be to amend it in some way or to remove it in some way or what that would be. Is that anything that either of you have heard whispers about?
Your rumor mill's better than my rumor mill, apparently. So.
Well, I think it always has the potential to be of interest. It definitely is of interest to some of our residents. There's no question about that. You know, but I look at the length of time that we've had these protections in place. It's, what, 1996? And I look at the improvements that I've seen along rivers and lakes that they have been given partial tax credits for. That's been a direct benefit to the habitat and a benefit to the community. So I see lots of pluses. Yes, there are some regulations in place there, but primarily it's just asking residents to be, you know, good stewards, and giving them some flexibility and allowing some things to be done and not allowing some things to be done that could be, you know, hazardous or deleterious to the environment. But yeah, I think it's always something in there that probably has a target depending upon the size of that target. But I'm not sure I see anything in the near future coming forward.
Yeah. And maybe just to follow up on that, Dale, again, wearing your real estate cap, is that over the years since that ordinance was sort of updated back in, what was that, 2012 or 13? Has that been an issue for you that you've noticed people dealing with in terms of land use?
It's been a little frustrating for some people on how and dealing with the River Center. I don't know if I, you know, the tax exemption issue that Hal mentioned is a little different. That's a different thing than the 50-foot ordinance. But I guess I've not, you know, the last time I dealt with it, I was willing to keep it on the Kenai River and its tributaries, but I'm a little reluctant on the rest around the borough. And I know I've kind of heard from folks at the River Center that, you know, they don't do a lot, you know. Kenai River's the 800-pound gorilla that they deal with, and one of the things that most of the other rivers, you think of the Nilchik River and Anchor Point, they pretty much all have a wetlands around them that the 50-foot, you know, you don't even get close to the 50-foot. So it's, you know, I don't know that there's that much need for it in that area. And I know that's what I was championing the last time we touched on this, but I have not heard of any. I've not heard on anything coming up on this. So,
well, as you mentioned, Hal, it's something that always might potentially be in play, and that's certainly a debate that everyone here is, I think, pretty well familiar with at this point. You know, as we're getting kind of down to the last little bit of the program here, I'm curious. You know, I'm driving around and I'm seeing gas prices tick up a little bit. And that generally means that oil prices are ticking up a little bit, and of course they are. And how, as folks who are making budget decisions here on a local level, how much do you pay attention to those sort of major markers that we all look at all the time? And I heard it, I think during the break, you threw out a number, $109 a barrel oil. And when you hear those numbers, and that's sort of a marker of the level of spending and the level of services that a government can provide at a given price point. Are you paying, when it comes to borough stuff, are you paying much attention to that? Because as the state revenues do better, there's a potential for more help from the state to the borough. And is that stuff that you guys pay attention to as assembly members? I'm just kind of curious.
I look at the price of oil every single day.
Every day?
Every day.
I hear it, I guess for myself, I hear it on the radio several times a week, but my biggest marker is always what are gas prices doing? Because for me, it's like this, we live in Alaska, so we kind of want oil prices to be high, but at the same time, when I'm seeing $3.35, $3.40 a gallon, I'm going, it's...
Yeah, and so, you know, I think when we were really struggling with our budget a few years ago and had our biggest deficit, I think, you know, we're not tied into the price of oil as much as the state is, but I think that is the thing that affected us the most was price of gas, you know, went down to half of what it was. That meant the sales tax revenue that comes from gas was cut in half. And I think that, you know, I don't know what the percentage is, but I would say sales tax revenue on gasoline is a huge amount to the borough, and that probably was the impact that we received the most from prices of oil being down, as well as some of the oil and gas properties and how they value them. But still, I think gasoline price at the pump was probably the biggest factor driving some of the problems that we had with our budget.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I think that probably just about every member on the assembly notices those numbers because they know what the impact is. I think we do. I think we do watch it.
Yeah, it plays pretty close. And just the last few minutes here, I can't let you go without addressing one of the biggest things that may or may not happen here on the borough in the near future, and that would be the AK LNG project. And I know that meetings continuing up in the Nikiski area with the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. And just curious for both of you, we hear from the mayor all the time, you know, hope is not a plan, but yet here we all are hoping that this $20 billion investment is going to be made in North Kenai. For the two of you as sitting assembly members, do you put any, how much, I'm sure you pay attention to it every day as the news stories come out and this sort of thing, but how much stock do you put in the promise of a project like that?
I think we're as close now as we've ever have been. I've been here since 74 in Kenai. And even before I got here, there was talk of a gas pipeline, you know.
Right.
So it's been a long time. But I think from a standpoint of seeing something come of it, we're probably closer now. I mean, but there are a lot of ifs, ands, and buts out there. The relationship between our country and China, for instance, I think will have an impact on that because that's where a lot of the financing is coming from. And that's one of the partners, at least for a while. So I think it's going to have some impact on that. But I think there's more planning that's we see and hear more and read more about it than we have over the years. So I you know, whether we see it happen or not in our lifetime, that I don't have the answer to that. My crystal ball doesn't look that far into the future.
Right.
But I think we're further ahead than we have been before.
Yeah. And Dale, is this the magic bullet that's going to be the the end all be all and life will be grand forever and ever?
Well, I don't know about that. I do support the pipeline. I just have absolutely no confidence in the state getting us there. So I one of the things I've heard from people is that at some point the producers might step back into this and get us to the finish line. And I think for going through the planning and the permitting process right now, the state's probably in a good position to work us through that. But I would, I guess I really hope that the people that build pipelines for a living get involved in this again at some point.
Right. And the promise of a project like that, I would have to think, again, as people who are on a deliberative body and setting local policy for things, something like this, even kind of simmering away on the back burner, I would have to think that you're entertaining on some level, what does this mean? You know, when we have all these extra workers, when we have all these economic impacts, I'm sure you're not losing sleep over it, but at the same time, it's kind of, you know.
Well, so, you know, I hear that from people, and I think the thing that my takeaway on it is that we have declining population in the schools. I would love to see more families here, and I think it would reverse the trend that we've been seeing. I don't know that the Kenai Peninsula Borough we'd see more jobs, but I don't know that we would have detrimental impacts from more people being in this area. I think that we're a sophisticated, diversified economy, and we could handle the increase in the oil and gas, you know, for doing this pipe, the construction project, and be just fine with it. So I don't know that there'd be a lot of impacts. I certainly don't think there'd be any new schools that would need to be built.
Yeah, I think a lot of it would be probably fairly temporary on the front end, but just having those massive properties out there that are generating all that business would be for sure a good thing. Well, here we are just about back to the top of the hour again here on KDLL, and it's been a fun hour speaking with Dale Bagley and Hal Smalley from the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly. And gentlemen, again, thank you so much for making some time and coming in this morning and talking about all the fun stuff going on at the borough right now. Thank you so much.
Yep, thanks.
Thanks, Shayla.